On listening to first reading there from Job, you would not, if you'd had a very rough night, you would not want to turn up here at church this morning and feel as though you're going to be uplifted. That's not going to happen if you read Job. Job's story is particularly dismal, unfortunately. But remember that it's a story. So if you read the book of Job, it is primarily a conversation between Job and between God, because Job suffers. Initially, he is a man whom we would call blessed, very blessed. He has a lot of property. Actually, right at the beginning of the book, it tells us how many sheep and cattle and camels he has. He has seven sons and they're all well. He has three daughters and they come together regularly. They actually take it in turn once a week to dine in each other's house. So the family is almost picture perfect. Job's world is picture perfect. And then all of a sudden he gets this message that the Chaldeans have come over the hill and stolen all of his livestock, all of his cattle and sheep and camels and everything else. And so his property is gone. And then another person comes over the hill and says, your family were gathering, your sons and three daughters, they were gathering in the house and a storm hit the house and everybody's dead. Things are not going well for Job. And then sure enough, somebody comes back over the hill again and says, and not only that, you're now inflicted with this awful disease that affected his face and I think his entire body, a blistering. So Job went from having everything to having nothing. And that's an example, if you like, of suffering, a very clear example of suffering. But we mustn't get stuck there, because it's the conversation that Job has. Three friends come to console him, and then each of them offer a different perspective in the conversation. So it is that conversation that is important. So the book of Job is placed at the beginning of what we call the books of wisdom in the Hebrew Bible. So following Job will come Psalms. So primarily these texts are there to give insight into how we thrive and how we survive being humans in this world. Because nobody is immune from suffering. Nobody. And things can happen, as you know, very, very quickly in our life, where one day it is perfect sunshine and the next day we have walls flooding with water. Things go belly up in our life. And the point of using that reading today, it's because it's connected to the gospel, as it usually is, but it allows us the opportunity to have an insight into suffering in the world. And we can look at this insight in terms of the world in the big picture, or and we can look at it in terms of how do I handle it. So we go to the gospel, and there we have Jesus. He's left the synagogue and he's gone straight to the house of Simon and Andrew. And we find that Simon Peter's mother-in-law is sick. So you might just make a mental note here for starters as I pause. So Simon Peter, the first pope, was married. Okay, he was married. That's okay, as long as they don't make it compulsory. And he was a great man, Simon Peter. But remember, behind every great man is a very suspicious mother-in-law. So Simon, back on track now. So Simon goes to, Jesus goes to Simon's house. She's sick. This is part of the build-up of Mark's gospel. She is suffering. Jesus doesn't say a word. All he does is take her by the hand and lifts her up. And the word that is used in Greek, lifts her up, is the same word that's used later in Mark's gospel for the resurrection. So whenever that happens, it's always connected to what Jesus does. So the suffering that she experienced was an opportunity for others to witness what's going to happen with the resurrection. And that's why she began to serve. Because once a person was unwell, once a person was put out of their social caste, which she would have been, Simon Peter's mother-in-law would have been almost ostracised. Why was she living in that house? If she was his mother-in-law, which we're told she and her husband had died, she should have been living with the brothers, not with Simon Peter. And that's a little sociological exploration we can have at another time. But it's an example of the fact that she is out of her place. And when she serves, she's healed, she's back in her place. So things come back to the order and the way that they should be. So the suffering is over and the celebration can begin. And celebration for this particular woman was to serve. The example for us is that as we go through our suffering, when we come through that, and we will, when we come through that, we then serve. We then start to experience the resurrection and we give back. We do not keep the miracle of our being healed or cured to ourselves. It does not belong to us. When Jesus in the scriptures talks about curing and healing, they are two different things. Curing belongs to the world of the disease. Diseases get cured, people don't. People get healed. And how do they get healed? They get healed in their wholeness, not just from what ailment there might be, but in their whole mind, heart, body, and soul. That is what healing is. And we receive that when we receive service. And that comes from Jesus, who says nothing. He takes her by the hand. He doesn't say a thing. Takes her by the hand and lifts her up. And therefore she is able to bring the joy of all of that, the Jesus experience, to those that are in her immediate world there. The question isn't then, why does suffering happen in the world? Why do bad things happen to good people? That's not the question, I don't think. I think the question is, because everybody's affected by suffering, I think the question is, what do I do with the suffering? What do I do with my experience? And then secondly, what do I do when I see others or experience others suffer? And I think the answers lie, firstly, what do I do with my suffering? I take that as an opportunity to learn patience, for starters. And I know that some of you will be sitting there and saying, well, Father Richard, you've never had breast cancer. You've never had some deadly disease. And I haven't. But I do know what suffering is. And it may not be a physical disease, something that needs curing, but it is something that does need healing, because suffering wraps itself and presents itself in many different ways. So we take personally the suffering experience for us as an individual, and we learn things like patience, we learn things like trust. Sometimes it may be endurance. We learn things like openness to others, and we learn things like hope, all the virtues that come in. That doesn't remove the pain. It helps lift us up. It helps us come closer to not just the Jesus experience, but the resurrection experience. And that's where hope comes from. And when we see suffering in others and we experience suffering in others, there's one word that aligns us with that so that we can help people at that time. And that word is compassion. Compassion is the two Greek words which means to suffer with. So we put ourselves with those who are suffering. And we don't have to say anything, as you heard in the gospel. Jesus touched her and lifted her up. Quite often the words get in the way. And they do. And that's probably why Jesus was then able to remove himself from what was a scene of suffering in that household and go back and recharge his batteries in the way that he did that. And there's a lesson in this for all of us, is that we have a limit, each and every one of us, of what we can put up with. And we need to sensibly and appropriately manage that limit. Be aware of it and take care of it. Jesus removed himself from it and he prayed. Some of us find it very difficult to pray when we're experiencing suffering. We find it much easier to blame God. That's not praying. So to challenge ourselves as we enter into the Lenten period, it would be a good thing to start to examine what do I do and how do I manage personal pain or personal suffering in my life, and how do I manage or assist those who might be suffering in my world. If you can't come up with any strategy, then remove yourself if you can from that, as Jesus did, and start praying. If you are not getting any better, as it were, spiritually in your suffering, you need, and I would do the same, I need to examine the quantity and the quality of my prayer. And there lies the solution for how I handle suffering personally and how I handle the suffering of others. My compassion for others is not based on words. It's actually based on my prayer, my hope of being lifted up. And that would be my hope for you in your suffering, both personally and for those that are in your world, that you might experience patiently, trustingly, and eventually joyously the hope of the resurrection.